Welcome to the Hoops Hype Podcast. My name is Alex Kennedy. Before we get started, I want to let everyone know that we will continue to post new episodes of the podcast every Monday and Thursday. We know this is a scary time and we're all taking it very seriously, but we also know that with sports and many other things being canceled, there really aren't many distractions out there for people who want to take a break from everything going on in the real world. Also, there's a lot of people who are home and very bored right now, so we will continue to record new episodes and we'll still be posting articles on hoopshype.com. We want everyone to be safe and stay home as much as possible. Fortunately, we can record this podcast and put it out from home, so keep checking back for new episodes every Monday and Thursday. This interview was recorded last week before the NBA announced that the season is suspended, so we don't discuss that at all, but it was a fun conversation. Here's my interview with Jason Richardson. Joining me today is Jason Richardson, who is a 14-year NBA veteran who averaged 17.1 points and 5 rebounds over the course of his career. He's also a 2-time slam dunk contest champion. Recently, he joined the advisory board of Golden Seed, which is a California cannabis company that grows its own marijuana and hemp on 20 acres of land. Jason, thanks for joining me. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me on, Alex.
Thanks for joining me. Okay, so I want to talk about your upbringing first. You played a lot of different sports as a kid, and I read that growing up, hockey was actually your favorite sport. You initially wanted to play in the NHL. When did you become a big hockey fan, and why did you stop playing?
Well, I was growing up in Michigan. You had to be a hockey fan. The Red Wings were winning all the time. It was a Stanley Cup all the time. And, you know, everybody in Michigan played hockey because all the ponds freeze over around there. And a group of friends of mine, we always go to rummage sales and buy different sports equipment and just try it. We, you know, pick up golf clubs, baseball bats. You know, one time we decided to pick up hockey gear and we taught ourselves how to skate because of, and, you know, year after year, we got a little bit better. We started playing on traveling teams and doing things like that. But by the eighth grade, I had to give it up because my feet got too big for skates. And back then it was unheard of getting cut from hockey skates.
Wow, I didn't realize that. So whenever your feet didn't fit in the skates anymore, you went to high school, you played basketball, track, football. What did you play in football? What position were you in? Do you think you could have made it to the NFL if you had focused your full attention on football?
No, I wouldn't have made it to the NFL. I just like football. Like I said, I love every sport. I was a multiple sport athlete. You know, back then, that's what everybody did. You try to be all state in as many sports as possible. I played wide receiver, played defensive end, and then a little bit of quarterback. But I knew basketball was always my first love, and that's what I really wanted to do, after my hockey dreams had to give up.
Whenever you were a kid, I'm sure you had that moment when you realized that you're the best athlete among your friends. But at what point did you realize that you're one of the best basketball players in your age group and that playing professionally may be a realistic option?
Well, I didn't realize that until later on, until I got to college, that I knew I had a chance to be an NBA player when I played against the USA Dream Team 2, which featured Vince Carter, Ray Allen, Alonzo Mourning, Ben Baker, Jason Kidd, all those guys. We had a game against those guys in Hawaii. And I'm like, man, I think I could play in the NBA. But you know, growing up in my neighborhood, we had so many guys that were athletic. Charles Rogers, a great friend of mine who just passed away in November. He was a number 2 pick in the NFL draft.
Yeah.
You know, I had a teammate, DeAndre Hewlett. He played, some professional basketball overseas. He was actually my high school mate. Was a better athlete than me. There's so many athletes from my little small town of Saginaw that I wasn't really the greatest athlete of them all because we all were good athletes.
Wow, that's crazy. Something in the water, I guess. That's incredible.
Yeah, definitely something in the water. Yes, it is.
When Al Harrington was on this podcast, we talked about the We Believe Warriors, and he talked about the fan support being incredible, and he joked that you guys were so beloved that you could have murdered somebody and gotten away with it. What was that We Believe season like for you?
That We Believe season was incredible. You know, a great group that accomplished something that, you know, nobody gave us a chance to do. Just to make in the playoffs was a big accomplishment on their own, but then to go in that playoffs and be the team that was favored to win the championship, Dirk Nowitzki was an MVP. It was something special, and we always go cherish because those guys, we came together. It was a bunch of bandits, a bunch of guys that just had bad reputation, a bunch of guys that, you know, everybody kind of tossed aside, and we all bonded together as teammates, as brothers, and accomplished something special.
It seemed like that team had incredible chemistry. You know, were you guys, was that team much closer than maybe other teams you were on? And what were some of your favorite memories throughout that season?
You know, that team was probably one of the closest teams I was on. I think the other closest team that, you know, guys really got along together with my Phoenix team in 2010. But that We Believe team was so special because, like I said, nobody gave us a chance. You know, at the time I was coming off an injury. A lot of people were saying I was overpaid, wasn't worth it. You had Steven Jackson coming off the brawl in the Palace. Barron, they said he was injury prone. Al Harrington, same thing. Matt Barnes is just, you know, he was a castaway, he was a thug, that he wasn't a brilliant basketball player. And so for us to all band together, and it just, you know, fought for each other. It was trying to prove something that we could do this at a, especially the type of way we played. We were small. We were in your face. We shot a lot of threes, but we also played defense. It was incredible. And you can just remember all the times where, you know, the first time we was on the plane and we all like knew that we was all back healthy. Barron had finally came back. He was healthy. We played Detroit. I think we beat Detroit by 30 some points. And we all made a pact right then and there on the airplane that we're going to do this for each other. We're going to make the playoffs.
That's awesome. I love it. You mentioned, you know, shooting a lot of threes. You led the NBA in three-pointers in 2007-08. You're 26th all-time in three-pointers made. Now that three-point shooting has taken over the NBA, what do you think of the NBA's evolution? And do you ever wonder how you'd fare in today's NBA?
I think I'll fare pretty good in NBA. I think you know, these guys right now are so skilled. Back in my days, most guys were more specialized. This guy was here because he played defense, or this guy was here because he could rebound, or this guy was here because he had a good post game. Now these kids, now in the NBA, or young men that are in the NBA, they could do everything. I mean, they could, you know, you got a 7-foot guys that could play point guard, rebound, assist, shoot the three. And so the game has evolved so much more now. But I think one thing, if you definitely can shoot the ball, you definitely play in the NBA today. And I think out there we're pretty well in it.
Yeah, I agree. I feel like you're one of the more underrated NBA players from your era, and I don't think you get enough credit. You know, averaging 17.1 points over 13 years is really hard to do, and you were simultaneously an elite athlete and an elite shooter. Do you feel like you're underrated?
Yeah, I think I was a little bit underrated. I feel like I should have made the All-Star team a few times. But, you know, the game has changed now. It's different because in my era, even if you know, averaged 20 points, if you didn't win, it didn't matter. So I understood that part. I had a lot of losing years and, you know, during those times. So people thought it was just number chasing. But if you look at it now, it's a lot of guys that's having tons of points. Their team's not doing good, but they still get the accolades. They get the All-Star games and stuff like that. But I think back in the time, it was more team-oriented as far as what are you doing to help your team win games. And yeah. So I see the different areas. And when I see that respect to it, I understand how the game has changed in that perspective. But I think, you know, I was just in Oakland. My son had a tournament there. And, you know, I'm going to different places, going to work out, going to restaurants. And all those fans out there, they appreciate what I did. So that mattered more to me than anything when I left my mark and people could understand and how hard I played and how hard I worked on my game. Means a lot to me. It made me feel really appreciated when I do that and I go back to Oakland and the Bay Area.
For sure. I'm based in Orlando, so I was around that team a lot during Dwight Howard's final season on the Magic, and you were there for that as well. That was such a weird year for everyone involved, I feel like. Jameer Nelson was on the podcast recently, and he talked about how frustrating that year was, just because all eyes were on that team for non-basketball reasons. There was a ton of national media every day. There's a lot of drama. I'm sure you got a million questions about it every day. What was that season like for you?
You know what? It was a wash to me because you got that team and the talent was on that team. You had myself, you had Dwight, you had Jameer, you had Hito, you had Brandon Bass, we had Glenn Davis. I mean, we had so much talent on that team and, you know, we could have done something really special, but we were distracted by what was going on with Dwight's free agency. And that was hard for us because we all felt like we really got together and we played for each other. We could have done something really special there. So it was a weird situation. You know, one day you talk about getting different players in, trading different players, and then it goes from, you know, Stan being in the media talking about, you know, the right one, Stan, to get fired. And it was really like a circus, and it took away from something special that we could have done as a team.
Yeah, I feel like that had to be exhausting. It was exhausting for me. So to be in it as a player on the team, I can't imagine. But as part of the Dwight Howard blockbuster, you were sent to the Philadelphia 76ers, and you were in Philly for the start of the Trust the Process era. The tanking obviously paid off. They got Joel Embiid, Ben Simmons. They're a contender now. But I'm curious about your experience there. Sam Hinkie was hired in 2013, which was your second year in Philly. And I know you missed that year with a knee injury, but you were still around the team behind the scenes. Hinkie ended up trading Drew Holiday, Thaddeus Young, Evan Turner, a bunch of the veterans. When Sam first arrived and the tanking started, what was said to the team or said to you specifically as a veteran that wanted to win?
It was tough for me. I'm not going to lie. Every day I got a chance to talk to Sam, I didn't understand what he was doing. I didn't understand the losing part of it. I didn't understand the analytical part of it. And I was trying to get an understanding. I was trying to be open. But, you know, coming from that old school, being taught by old school guys like Cal Bertani, Cliff Robinson, Avery Johnson, Derek Fisher, those guys, being around them, learning from Grant Hill, I couldn't settle in that losing mentality. And so I fought a lot of the stuff that was going on, but I kind of understood once I more and more I started talking to the management, to the people that had doing all the analytical things. But it was tough. And I was trying to, as much as possible, encourage those young guys. You know, we had a lot of guys coming in. I think the first year or the second year that it happened, it was something like we had 27 different guys coming through that locker room. You know, they was bringing guys from D-League. They were staying for half the season, staying for a game or two. And it was constantly changing. And I think for me, I had to get away from what the management was doing and try to help focus these young guys to try to have a successful career, especially the ones that were trying to scratch and crawl and to get in the NBA. Just try to teach them how to be pros. And I think that was the fun part of it. I was like the uncle in there. I was 33, 34 years old, and they calling me old because most of those kids were like 18, 19. I was an older guy, so it was funny, you know, being a part of it. And I can remember when Michael Carter Williams coming to the locker room, and, you know, after the media day, we're sitting there, and he's like, man, I remember watching you in the second grade in the dunk contest. I said, what'd you just say? He said, well, you in the dunk contest. I said, well, you was in the second grade? He's like, yeah, I was in the second grade. And I started doing the math. I'm like, damn, I am old. So it was fun being around those guys, you know, helping those guys as much as possible.
Well, yeah, I mean, that was I agreed with the idea to tank because the NBA is so star driven. But, you know, my big criticism during that time was after you left, it felt like there weren't really a lot of veterans there. Obviously, later they went out and signed J.J. Redick and Amir Johnson. But I felt like in order to make that work, you had to have strong veteran leaders in that locker room to teach these guys about professionalism and make sure they're developing the right way and all that. So I was glad that you were there. And then again, later they brought in some different veterans. But there was a period there where they really didn't have a lot of veterans. So I think that was kind of really important. But I want to ask you this, you know, so in 2013-14, the team won 19 games. The following year, when you returned, 18 wins. Just about every night, the team was losing, but there were no real expectations for that team. So my question is, what was the mood like around the team during that time?
It was tough. I think the young guys, when they first started it, they were excited because they were just, you know, like a kid in the candy store. They made it to the NBA, the dream, the ultimate goal. But then when you start losing, you know, 10, 15, I think we got up to 19 games that you lost in a row, it becomes defeating, it becomes deflating. And, you know, going through that at a young age in my career, you know, being in Golden State, we wasn't winning a lot. I think one game, I mean, one season, we won 17 games. You just try to keep them positive and let them know what you're working on. And I think my biggest thing, advice given to those young guys were, you know, the odds of you staying here for your whole career is very slim. Unless you know, the Kobe, the LeBron, the Steph Curry, those guys can stay where they want to whenever and go wherever they want to. But I told them every time you step on the floor, it's an addition for another team. You know, later on the season when, you know, some of the guys are getting traded, they're like, oh my gosh, I got traded. You know, I won rookie of the year, I got traded. Michael Carter Williams, I won rookie of the year, I got traded. And I remember him calling me and telling me that. And he's like, man, I just thank you for everything you taught me, because it's showing me that this is a business and I have to be professional on and off the court.
Yeah, I feel like you were one of those guys that you would talk to players around the league and they would, you know, rave about you as a teammate and as a leader. You know, why was that so important to you? Because some guys just think, you know what, I'm going to just focus on me and kind of put blinders on. Other guys are more like you and they want to, you know, be close to their teammates and help them. Why was that something that was so important to you?
Because I think it comes back down to legacy, what you leave. Of course, you get all the accolades and you can get, you know, championships and MVPs and all that stuff. But what impact have you made on the next person that coming through the system like you did? And like I said, I had great vets around me from Grant and Avery and Calvert and Derek. They passed down so much knowledge from me, Cliff Robinson, that helped me with my career. And I think with the NBA, the lifespan of a career is so slim and it's so low that you try to have long careers. So when I talk to those guys and ask them what they did to have long careers, that's what I wanted for myself. And so me going through 14 years, you know, living the dream, I want that for every guy that I had and pass it down to the next generation, the generation after that. So we're not having guys that's only in the NBA for 2 or 3 years. We're having guys in the NBA for 10 to 15 years.
For sure. And last thing for you about that Philly team, that tanking became a national storyline, you know, much like the Dwight Mayer in Orlando. And some fans were really mad. I feel like you either loved it or and bought into it, or you hated it and you thought it was bad for basketball. There was no real in between. What did you make of the intense reaction to the tanking?
It was kind of hilarious because I wasn't in it all the way myself, and I was a team. I was on the team. And it was interesting, you know, what was going on. They got Joel the next year, and I saw Joel at practice, and I saw him a few games at Kansas, and I knew he was a pro. And he was kind of working his way back. We was playing 3-on-3. I was kind of working my way back. And he would just – you see somebody, and you just knew he was special. I mean, the things he was doing, he was knocking down threes that somebody was, you know, faster than him. If they were slower than him, he would take them off the dribble. If he was bigger than him, he would post them up. He just done everything, and I was like, this kid is a superstar if he get healthy. And they fire Sam the next year. They go into the draft, and Philadelphia gets the number one pick. And I immediately texted Sam, and I said, I'm a believer.
Yeah.
You know, you get all these number one picks. You know, Sam, he made the sacrifice. You know, the fans, a lot of fans didn't understand what he was trying to do. But the majority, they actually, I guarantee you, they thank you now because he put together what that roster is with the foundation as far as Joel and Ben Simmons. But, I mean, it was one of those situations. You either love it or you hate it. And at the time, I hated it. But by the end, you know, speaking to Sam every day, talking to him, understanding his thought process, and really, you know, I was with my basketball buddy because I was trying to understand, you know, I know I was on my way out the league, so I was trying to understand as much front office information because that's what I eventually wanted to do. And so every day I look forward to try to talk to Sam and just pick his brain. And we became really close on that part of it, you know, seeing each other every day in practice and talking about it. But at the end, I believed in the situation he was trying to create, and he created it.
Yeah, he won you over. I agree. I think now fans, even if they did doubt it at the time, and it makes sense, you know, it had never been done before, so a lot of people were kind of hesitant and skeptical, but now we saw that it worked, and they have two superstars, and, you know, they're a perennial contender, so it did seem to work. Do you still want to work in a NBA front office at some point?
Yes, I do. That is a dream job of mine right now. Right now, I'm finishing up my schooling right now. I'm going to school, finishing up. I promised my mom before I left Michigan State that I'd go back and get my degree. So for the last 2 years, I've been studying sports management, getting my degree, working towards my degree, and hopefully one day be working in the front office.
Are the classes online or are they in person at all too?
I'm doing some online. I'm doing some in person. And I'm telling you right now, as a 39-year-old man, it's not fun going on campus with 19-year-old kids.
Well, that was my question. I mean, you're in sports management classes, so I'd imagine that you're around a lot of people that love sports. How do you get recognized a lot when they read your name off for attendance? Are people looking over and talking to you afterwards? I mean, are you recognized often?
Yeah, it's pretty funny because, you know, some of the kids, they know who I am. The ones that really follow basketball, they know who I am, and they just decided to see me on campus. Like, what are you doing? And like, I'm like, hey, this lets you know how important your education is. You know, that you have to go back and one day get it. And so they're like, wow. So it's pretty fun seeing those kids and talking to the other ones, and it's just a great experience I'm experiencing right now.
So, as you mentioned, you were a two-time slam dunk contest champion, one of the best dunkers ever. We recently saw Aaron Gordon lose to Derrick Jones Jr. in a dunk-off. That's the second time he's lost in a dunk-off. What did you make of that outcome and Aaron's performance?
Well, I think Aaron Gordon has lost the dunk contest and robbed twice in a row. I might be a little biased, but I think the dunks he had done were unseen. They were great. They were spectacular. I was just talking to a kid yesterday who knew who I was. I was working out at a gym, and I was just telling him how these guys are evolving. Like, you know, some of these guys are doing dunks that I was doing in the NBA, and they're doing it in high school. And so it's just funny how evolving these guys and how crazy they're jumping and the tricks they're coming up with. It's just amazing.
Yeah, it really is. I talked to some dunk contest winners who get annoyed when people constantly talk about them as a dunker. They feel like it overshadows their other skills and who they are as a player. I know Zach LaVine has said that he's more than just a dunker, and that's one of the reasons why he didn't participate in the dunk contest this year. Did you ever feel that way?
Yes, I did feel that way. I felt that way probably going into my third dunk contest. I really didn't want to do it. I was working on my game, working to become a better shooter, better all-around player. And I really didn't want to do the dunk contest. And if you ever go back and watch the third dunk contest and watch my other two dunk contests, my emotions wasn't really in it because I didn't want to be labeled a dunker. I think that's the hardest thing for a player that's working, constantly working on their game to become a complete player, is to be labeled as something. And that dunk contest, I think I could have won. My energy wasn't there. I wasn't really excited about being there. And I just didn't have it in me because I didn't want to have that label. He's just a dunker because I really worked hard on my game.
Right. So then you were just like, I'm just going to go lead the league in three pointers and then I'll shut that up.
Right.
I love it. When you retired in 2015, you said you didn't want to limp for the rest of your life. You were concerned about, you know, long-term health effects. Are you glad you walked away when you did? And how are you feeling these days?
I'm feeling great. I think it was a great time for me to leave at the time. My health is great. I'm just seeing a lot of my kids playing sports. I have a daughter that's playing college basketball. I have sons that's going through, you know, the basketball rankings of AAU. It was the right time for me, and I have no regrets because I think I left everything on the floor.
You recently joined the advisory board of Golden Seed, which is a California cannabis company that grows its own marijuana and hemp on over 20 acres of land. How did that all come together?
I came across Golden Seed through a mutual friend, and I was brought down to their facilities and just impressed about their lifestyle of how they was trying to do the cannabis cultivating. I think they offer so many different things. I don't partake in, you know, consuming marijuana, but I see the effect that it helps with people that have, you know, arthritis, glaucoma, even with the CBD oils with the kids that are having seizures. And I feel like I need to be a part of that because it is helping people that have a medical need.
For sure, yeah. I mean, there's a CBD clinic where I live here in Lakeland, Florida, and I've talked to people there about it, and it feels like there's a lot of misconceptions about, you know, hemp and cannabis and CBD oil and things like that. Have you noticed that too since getting involved in this industry, that there's a lot of misconceptions or misleading information about the products?
Yeah, it is. I think everybody think it is still a gateway drug, but you see, you know, how many people are really changing their lifestyles of, you know, cannabis over, you know, taking pills that could affect your liver, could affect your health. I think a lot of people understand it a lot more.
Yeah, I agree. When Al Harrington was on the podcast, he talked about how you know, he has his cannabis companies, and he used cannabis for pain relief after one of his surgeries later in his career, rather than taking the opiates that he was prescribed. Do you feel like we'll see the NBA eventually allow players to use cannabis for pain relief? Because opioids are, you know, obviously they're so dangerous, and I think people are kind of getting scared of them nowadays. Do you think we'll see the NBA make that change at some point in the future?
My goal, and I think guys like Al and anybody else that's involved in the cannabis industry, it's not just the NBA. We want to see all sports, you know, especially football players that go through so much pain and rigorous with all sports. You're training, you constantly muscles, you constantly taking your body to do something to help your body recover, to relax, to take away the pain. And I think this is a more healthier alternative than taking pills. So I think hopefully the NBA will soon do that. I'm hearing football is talking about that right now with their negotiation with their player union and the owners. Major League Baseball is doing it. So we just hope around the board that this is for everybody, that they will be allowed, sports guys and athletes all over the world, be able to do this instead of taking an alternative of medical pills that could have life consequences with them.
For sure. It feels like that industry is blowing up, and there's a lot of different businesses in that cannabis space. So what was it about Golden Seed that stood out to you?
I think it's just the lifestyle they're creating. I mean, not only are they in the cannabis, but they're also in the hemp. They're hemp thing, you're building, trying to make hemp bricks. They're doing clothing. It's just a lifestyle, and I think they're really trying to help everybody out too. I think their products are great. I think the way they're approaching it is great. I think the guy they have on board is also great. And I think it's just going to help everybody out. And I was really impressed with, you know, Scott Goldie, who's the owner, his vision on becoming, you know, a place that, you know, everybody can enjoy, you know, and everybody could feel good about themselves. So I think it's going to be a great opportunity for this company, becoming one of the first cannabis cultivating, certified by the SEC, so anybody could join and as little as $100 could become a part of an owner, part of an investor in this company. So I think this company has a way to expand a lot of people and help a lot of people out.
And last thing for you, you seem like you've had a lot of success in retirement, whether it's business ventures like this or, you know, as you mentioned, going back to school. What advice would you give to a player that is approaching retirement, or maybe they had injuries and had to retire sooner than they expected? What's kind of, to you, what are the keys to having a successful retirement?
I think the keys to a successful retirement is knowing where plan B is. I think a lot of guys get stuck with, you know, the basketball career is over, what do I do now? I think that's a lot of guys have a hard time with that. But I think if guys have plan B ready when they retire and then go on with life, you'll have an easy transition. And, of course, save your money. Have fun, but save your money.
Well, thank you so much for your time. Everyone, make sure you check out Golden Seed and follow Jason on Twitter at JRich23. And if you want to hear more episodes of the Hoopsite podcast, check us out on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or anywhere you listen to podcasts. Until next time, thanks for listening.